This is a podcast from the people behind the world's longest running football fans podcast, The Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and listen anywhere that you get your podcasts. You can have a free subscription where this lands straight in your email inbox, and you can go to theCelticUnderground.substack.com. You can also have a paid subscription where you get some additional content, including the In Conversation podcast every week, End, and the Selecta Written, which is basically a rehash of the E-Tim's Rumour Mill, oops, from Glen Tintin from years ago. Anyway, this is me, Harry Brady, with this week's podcast.
Welcome to this latest edition of Celtic Underground Match Podcast. Delighted to be joined with my friend in real name territory, Ross Hall. So it's Andrew Smith and Ross Hall. You don't need any other monikers when you've got us two. And we don't need any other games to talk of, because there was plenty to chew over from the game that's effectively, with what other events of the weekend, made Celtic champions, not elect, but champions without the absolute rubber stamp. How are you, Ross, and how are you chewing over the weekend?
I've popped the sort of goal breakdown on the Substack. I'm very happy.
Yep.
I thought it was a really good game. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And so, yeah, it's a good weekend. And I think I've sort of said in the Substack chat, it's maybe a rare moment where Rangers getting a draw I can live with quite happily, because I think winning the title when our own players are on the pitch is far better than winning it when everybody sat home on a Sunday afternoon.
Definitely. My boy was getting his...
A good weekend.
My boy was getting his shoes on as we were watching the Rangers, because they didn't look as if they were going to get that equaliser. We were watching the Rangers game on Sunday, and he's getting the shoes on. He said, "Dad, will you take me down to Celtic Park?" I went, "What for? Who's going to be around there?" And then when it went 2-2, we thought, and he was almost quite kind of, yeah, it'll be much better. Like 2 weeks on Saturday it is now, we know from the, I know we're making assumptions here that Celtic will at least get a point, but I think we can make the assumption that Celtic will at least get the point. And the 26th, is it? April the 26th up at Tannadice, 12:30 kickoff. So,
yeah. I don't make predictions. I just, I hope, always hope. But no, you're right. You know, the weekend has ultimately kind of made the situation such that it's a case of when now as opposed to if. And to be fair, it's probably been that way for a while, but that's just never the way I am never comfortable sitting with that in my mindset. So I always just go on the if. And, I think even now I can sort of say when, lose every game, a 30-odd goal difference, and,
Yeah, my boy was asking me what that works out. As I said, it's about 8 goals per game Rangers would need to score. That's assuming Celtic lose by a single goal. I said, but of course, the two of them are playing each other, so every goal that Rangers score counts double, if you like, if they were beating Celtic. So you could probably shave off, it'd maybe be 2 or 3 nil for them in the last derby, and then it would maybe be they need to win by 7 clear, another 4. Yeah. Assuming Celtic just lose by a single goal. But I don't even know why. I don't know why. But I've just gone through that with my boy, so that's why it was in my mind. But
thankfully, I don't think we need to worry about that.
No. But the when has been since January. There's some titles that there's not going to be any kind of major hiccups. And that's been one of those. And that's maybe why, which touched upon by our esteemed colleague, Eddie Pearson, in his Celtic Da column today about the fact that Celtic have been winning this title for so long, it's maybe straining some of the kind of joy that you would feel. If you think about it, when they last won the title at Tannadice, nobody gave them an earthly. Even at Christmas time, when in Ange Postecoglou's first season, when they drew that 0-0, that terrible 0-0 game at St Mirren, people said, "Oh, that's it. That's it. It's gone back to 6 points," if you remember. Yeah. And then, of course, they went top of the league, but when they beat Rangers in February, and it was only at that point you thought, this is a change in that. This is Celtic back. This is the titles on stream.
Yeah, it's. I think, you know, it maybe has taken a bit of the joy out of some people leading up to this game. Last weekend never helped, I don't think, because I think the chance to win it at home, that was the only disappointing bit about Saturday for me. Glorious day. It's Kilmarnock at home. Had the St Johnstone result been different, Saturday, you know, if we'd have cantered that 5-1 on Saturday the way we did, regardless of the second half, I don't think, you know, nobody would have cared. Party time.
Yeah.
I think the St Johnstone, the sort of malaise from the back of that and folk feeling, I would say folk felt quite let down by the St Johnstone result, and the Kilmarnock result was a great result, but it would have been an absolutely brilliant result if I hadn't been for the St Johnstone one the week before. And, you know, we're going to cover the Kilmarnock game, obviously, during this podcast. But I think, having seen some of the reactions to the fact that we won 5-1, and yet I get the feeling that some people are quite, not upset about it, but it's like, it's like that wasn't enough. And I really enjoyed the game. But I think a lot of that stems from the week before, as opposed to people just looking at this game as a standalone game and looking at a great result and seeing some great goals. I think there was still a wee bit, a sort of hint of disappointment at the fact that we never won the title on Saturday.
Yeah, and even Rodgers himself, you know, referenced that. Mm-hmm. He said it still annoyed him that this wasn't the game to win the title, and it still annoyed him what had happened. But even then, the reaction, I know they were awful. I know it was awful at Perth, but my God, I wish I'd have stayed off social media in the days after it, because it was like people were just like, it was the old scattergun, you know, like flame throwing the whole squad. It was like these pampered, you know, it was these pampered professionals, like half of them, they shouldn't be wearing that Celtic shirt again and all that. And it's like, have we really no move beyond that kind of knee jerkery?
No, if anything, I think it gets worse with social, as you say, social media and online. And to be fair, you know, we're sat doing this on a Celtic podcast. If you went back to the 90s and things like that, these things never really existed in this shape or form. And in some ways, people who do these podcasts, myself and yourself included, are a part of that now. Maybe not in the inflammatory way that some people are, but I just think that because now everybody's looking at everything in such minute detail, and we have all these different things, and, you know, we're going to discuss some of the stats and things like that tonight. I think it's become such a big thing that it's like, I said this to you just before we came on, I chatted to someone at the weekend and said, the scribe who works outside of Scottish football over in Holland, the scribe people in Scottish football that you come across to me, and he said, you're all miserable bastards. And I went, why? No, he wasn't directing at me. He did say that. He said, you're all right. I was like, yeah. That's probably because
we're sure he wasn't directing at you?
Well, I'd like to hope not. But I understood what he was saying in the sense that he went, you could have the most glorious thing going on, the most glorious player, a great young player, a great result, whatever. He went, but by God, if there's the slightest negative, he went, so taking this as an example, we've just won 5-1, scored some absolutely terrific goals. And he went, but for some, that's not enough. And the one goal will be an issue. And, you know, the second half will be an issue. And the second half becomes more of a focus than the first half. And he was like, there are just too many people who just need to find all the bits that weren't done right and not ignore what was done right, but kind of devalue what was done right. And I get what he was saying with that, and, you know, without calling everybody dead, I just understand. He's like, that is a very British thing. He went, it's a very Scottish thing. He went, and he was explaining it in a different context, because we were talking about individual players, and he was just like, I hear a lot of Scottish scouts and coaches. He went, and they'll talk about a player. He went, and that player could have three excellent top-tier abilities. He went, and they could have one negative one. He went, I can guarantee you that person will sit and tell me about the negative one as much as they'll tell me about the three real positives.
Yeah.
And so that was what we were discussing. And he went, but you bring that in your game. And he went, you know, and social media and media in Scotland are a big part of that. And I absolutely could not stand Jerry McNee as a youngster. Made a fortune reporting on Scottish football, but he was the most negative bastard going. in my opinion. And I was like, you're making money for our
game.
You know, there's a lot of people who make money for our game who literally cannot wait to nitpick it, just anything. And if something really good happens, it's like an inconvenient footnote. And that was what my friend was sort of getting over to me. And when he said to me, I'm sat going, I cannot disagree with you. Like, this is a big thing. So I, in my mindset, with these podcasts going forward and with anything that I write going forward, I am going to be as joyful can be, not for the sake of being joyful, but that is going to sit with me in the sense of I understood what he was saying. And I think when he said it to me, the sort of joy I felt in the sense of going, well, I know that when I write about players and things like that, I'm not like, I will see their faults and I will acknowledge their faults, but I like seeing the good bits about players. And yeah. Saturday's performance to me, if we want to jump that, that first half was amazing. Loved it.
Yeah.
I didn't even think the second half was that bad, but the first half, amazing, class. Loved it.
First 24 minutes, it was, I mean, my friend's a Kilmarnock season book holder. He said, nobody could have lived with you guys in that first half. He said, I didn't feel that bad about how we played the weekend because, and McInnes, Dennett McInnes as well said the same. You watched Celtic in that first half hour and you wonder, how do they ever lose games in Scotland?
I think the thing with Derek McInnes, and this is a rare moment, at the end of the game, whenever we beat them, there's always a referee or a decision or a something. He never said anything the weekend other than we needed to shut up shop because we were on the verge of a pasting. So we made changes. And I give him credit for the changes that he made in the second half because it did make a difference for them. His players did seem to react to the fact that, and you said this before we came here, goal difference could potentially be a big thing for them. And so all of a sudden in the second half, and I don't want to dwell on the second half because I know there's been a lot of comments on it and there's been some substack comments that hopefully will come to later on. But people are going, oh, we never had a shot for ages. Well, we did have shots, but Kilmarnock blocked the vast majority of them. They were getting bodies on the line. They were, you know, even the one where Engels hits the bar, when that came back to Engels, you've seen the sort of queue of people just try to rush in front of him, and he's picked a great shot. He's just a wee bit unlucky that he's just got a wee bit too much on it, and it's come off the bar and come away. Jota had some nice wee intricate bits of play. Kuhn had one that he broke into the box, and you're thinking he's on his left foot, he's just going to bend it away. Defender gets in front of it. So as much as I understand when people spoke about the second half and saying, we came down a gear, and I can't disagree with that. It was a wee bit slower. There was a wee bit more passing around the houses, but it wasn't as if we stopped trying to score. It just maybe didn't quite have the intensity of the first half. But, you know, human nature, we've seen this happen before. I'd have loved it if we won 10-1. Would have been amazing. But we won 5-1. And Ray Ohtati, amazing. Greg Taylor. This has came up in the Substack chat. I was saying, you know, who was everybody's man of the match? Most of went for Rio, and I understand that because two goals, an assist, a beautiful assist, a wee round the corner dink, brilliant finish by Ralston. It's two goals, you know, the first one, you can't say fairer than that. And this, even the second one, you know, sees the challenge, blocking challenge coming.
The way he carved it round.
Into the corner. Beautiful. Greg Taylor walks onto a pitch with his daughter. A lovely moment, in my opinion. I thought it was really cute. And then puts in a performance that says, this is my position. For as long as he may have left here, you're going to have to come and take this jersey off me, Jeffrey. Because that was an outstanding performance. Absolutely outstanding.
It's just, you forget sometimes like how well he plays. Maybe I'm guilty of forgetting how well he plays that inverted fullback role, what he actually adds to the team through stepping inside and picking his pass. You can tell the guy used to play. I mean, he started off as a midfielder, didn't he? So, like, he really is so comfortable in there. And it just does look like one more kind of midfield kind of prompter that you get. But I'm going to make my case, which I always make my case for this guy. But what James Forrest added at the weekend, you know, for a guy, when people used to say, when he was young, used to say, he doesn't have a trick. He doesn't think about what he's doing. His decision making is exceptional now. Mm. You know, I noticed the 98% pass completion rate, I think. Is that right? I don't know if you get any of those stats in front of you, but I'm sure I read that somewhere.
I couldn't get them. But I agree with you, absolutely.
See the little flick? The little flick in the build-up? Yep.
Oh, the wee dig pass over for AJ. That's
yeah,
point.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. You'll not hear me use many of these words all that often, but that first 30 minutes and some of the play and some of the passing, one touch, two touch, the vast majority for the first 30 minutes was literally one touch passing between Greg, Rayo, then that little trio between AJ, Engels and Forrest that led to him dinking it into AJ that led to Atati's second goal. You look at that and you go, max two touches, and again, I wrote this, it was like 17, 18 seconds. They played nine passes, taking out that entire entire left side of the Kilmarnock team on our right side. And then AJ has showed the awareness to not just blast one across the front, which he done with the first one, and he put it in a brilliant, dangerous area. Dyson's got a bit of luck that it's got stuck between the boy's legs and went through, and he's tapped in, easiest goal he'll ever score. But then with the second one, AJ showed brilliant awareness to go, right, I see him. I don't need to blast this across. I can pick a pass.
Yeah.
Clean on, 8-9 yard pass, and then Hitati sits the boy down and pops it in. And you're going, just those wee moments of play, like, absolutely outstanding. Like, just a real joy to watch. And I think I'd said this, and I've probably been saying this the last couple of weeks now. The start of our games since back in February have been awful.
Yeah, I've said that.
Really, really just cumbersome, lazy, loads of, I say this a lot, cheap things given away. And that was my want for this weekend, was to see us really hit a game.
It was the antithesis of that. It was the antithesis of that. Just, it was the ultimate in fast starts.
Yeah, just get the hammer on the nail, on the head, from the start, go. And they done that. And so that's probably why I'm so happy about it, because it was nice to see that. It was nice to see them take the reaction of Rodgers posing a very public question of them. And the vast majority of the team was the same. You know, it was minor changes. And you said it yourself last week after the St Johnstone game, people were talking about who was going to replace pretty much everybody. In fact, I think the only player who wasn't getting replaced after the St Johnstone game was Sinisalo and maybe Maeda. But
yeah. McGregor wasn't that bad, actually, in Perth.
But almost every name you've seen online was getting replaced. Carter Vickers was getting replaced. AJ was getting replaced. I thought AJ not replaced because I thought he was bad. I just think the volume of games he's had, if you have the option to rotate Ralston in, it's a home game. That's why I would have done that. But everybody else was getting replaced because if you read the instant reaction, they were all pish. Every one of them was hopeless.
Yeah, they were bad attitude, complacency had set in. Do you know what kind of amused me slightly? Rodgers and Friday, very public declaration, and it's all deliberate from them. We need to, we need change. We need to freshen it up. You can't allow the squad to get too settled and too complacent. And then you think, right, who looks complacent? Whose attitude looked questionable or problematic? Whose performance raised alarm bells in that fashion in terms of what happened in Perth? It was guys that have hardly been at Celtic less than a year, or if you add Kuhn, a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So he changes guys, right? And he brings in guys. Forrest has been in the team for 13 years. Like Taylor, 4.5 years. They look more driven and committed. Like Scales has been there for years and in and out. It's no, like, if change is required, you could say a lot of it is changing the people that he's just changed.
That he's just brought in.
That he's brought in. Like your Edas and your Kuhns, Schlup, like Trusty, these are probably can afford, they appear to be marked men now. And you think, this isn't guys that have been coursing distance for Celtic. Yeah. These are no treble winners or whatever. I suppose
I think what was probably that I took from that comment was, and I think he said this on Friday, was that some people within the club, and even, and this will apply to the new players as well, is they maybe turn up. And I remember Timo Pukki saying this in an interview that he'd done years after he left us, and he said, "What went wrong at Celtic?" Now, Pukki was never as bad as he was at us, but he said, "I kind of turned up and just thought it would be quite easy." And he went, "And I fast learned it's not easy, and especially mentally, the demands are very, very difficult." And I don't want to break down the recruitment bit too much, but that's very hard to judge when you sign a player to go. Is he going to cope with this? Because I'll continually say this. Name another, if I said name another five teams on the planet who have to win with the expectation that comes with playing for Celtic every week, you'd struggle to name them, because whether you name Real Madrid or Barcelona, their fans, they play in a difficult league. They accept that they are going to lose the odd game. They have the demands of, you're a very big club and they expect to play a certain way, but their fans understand that over the course of the season, if they lose five or six, it's not the end of the world. If we lose, you know, five or six in the league, it's, you know, we're,
I was looking at it.
the sharks are getting chucked, as someone would say, but
Yeah, they don't.
and that's hard.
Don't forget, they only lost five league games, in the kind of when the hairs were set on fire when the old 10 went. You know what I mean? Up in smoke. They actually only lost five league games that season. I think they've lost four now, have they? So. They might actually lose as many games this season as they did. We're finishing on 77 points, 25 points behind Rangers 4 years ago.
Yeah, we've drawn
It's.
three and lost four today.
Yeah,
And
they've lost four, so. And they only lost five in the 2021 season. So I can understand people after the Hibs defeat, and as you say, not even just the fact they've lost games, but they've just looked. They kind of lost their edge, which again, Roger said, the edge went off them as soon as they went out of the Champions League. It's a weird thing. It's almost like you think you're the hamster on the wheel, but you think, God, they're playing these games twice a week, and if anything, that should be what kind of like upsets them, or that should be what kind of what they're unable to keep pushing out performances, but. When you almost you come off it that you know you've got a bit more time. They haven't been as good a team playing one game a week as they were playing two games a week.
Yeah, and some people point out, they're like, sometimes it's, you know, Rodgers would say they need time to train. But actually, when we've had more time to train, the results have come in.
We
I
need
would,
less time to train.
what? But I think there is something in that, in the sense that sometimes I think when you get into that rhythm of just playing games, and it's like, I'd imagine, having never played that level, but I'd imagine it's almost like your body gets used to the fact that, right, Saturday or Sunday, often us, I've got a game. Wednesday, my body's ready to go. I've got another game. And then all of a sudden, I used to think that when Callum McGregor announced his retirement from international football, and the first wee while, the first couple of Scotland games after he had retired, the game that we played after there'd been an international break, I always used to think he was never quite as sharp. And so I see the benefit longer term for him,
Longer
because
term, yep.
it's a, you know, having a, get yourself up for those big international games, and Scotland's improvement has obviously made that a wee bit more difficult because they're playing against better teams and things like that. But then at the same time, it's like you've then got sort of 7 or 10 days off or whatever, which is a good thing in terms of just
Your body,
your body and mentally, and just being able to just down tools for a wee bit. But then you've got to try and get back up to that speed. And I think the volume of games he's played over, like, the last, you know, five, six, seven, however many years, has, like, that's probably just routine to him. To, and so then you have these gaps of a week when you've normally only got 2 days, or 3 days if you're lucky, throw in a travel day. You basically got 2 days of training if you're lucky, and then I've got a game. And so training is almost not a thing to most of the guys in our team, because it's like
No.
game, recovery, small session, travel, get back, rest, recovery, small session, game, you know, and that must be to then go, by the way, boys, this week you can have Monday off, train on Tuesday, have Wednesday, one on Wednesday, and you know, there's a wee light one on Friday, a couple of media duties for X, Y, and Z of his pop game on Saturday. And there, I'm not saying it's right that they've come off it and that the way they have in recent times, it's not, but I'm just saying it's one
look,
of those,
it's also understandable with
part,
this.
There's parts that it's that Bayern game was so huge and we were so, so close.
I know.
And that come down for that. When I think back to that Bayern game now, I actually think, you know, it was there. It was right there.
Yeah. Maybe it's exaggerated. It's like when you went fishing and you thought, look, you know what I mean? It was that size. No, it was that size. Fish you caught.
But I think, you know, that looking back on that Bayern game, it was just so, so close, and had it went to extra time and what potentially could have happened. And I get why there's been a come down. As I say, I can deal with us losing games, winning games, wrong, whatever. It happens. It's football. It's why I love watching football. I love the fact that anything can happen. It's performances that would be my arc. And that was kind of what I've said in some of the sort of pods, Substack things the last couple of weeks. It's the level of performance that would bother me more than the result. So yeah. The St. Johnstone game was more the level of performance. So when Rodgers came out and said, you know, I felt as if they wanted it more. Well, I think that, to me, that felt evident as well. I think that felt evident to everybody.
Yeah,
losing one now happens. It's, you know, bottom. He was right in what he said. Bottom against top, irrelevant. It's what manner did you lose the game, as opposed to why, you know, the end result. It's what was the manner of it. And that was the sort of better thing. But again, I'll go back to this week's game. Kilmarnock have given us problems in recent times. You know, home games we would...
The only team to beat Celtic twice last year, eh?
Yeah, and you go, we've stomped all of them and we've had Derek McInnes come out at the end of the game. No excuses, they were just better.
Yeah, and what about this? Like, we've got to deal with this, the kind of the stat that's going around that we don't know the veracity of it. But there's some claims that the 1,020 successful completed passes by Celtic is some record, some global record. Like, for a professional game in 90 minutes, it beats the previous record of 1,018 set by the legendary Spain team of Xavi and Iniesta in a win over Colombia. It smashes the previous UK record of 992 successfully completed passes, also set by Celtic in a win for Motherwell.
So I have just done a very quick Google, because I Googled for that stat before we came on, because we got this stat and we blame Harry for this. This is his stat.
Yeah, this is definitely.
And to be fair, he said unverified. So I've just done, and the first thing that's popped up is a Guardian article which says Bayern Munich had a record of 1,033 that came from an attempt, 1,109 attempted passes in a game with a 93.14% accuracy, was the record back in 2019. We certainly made a lot of passes, and again, this will link into what some people have been saying about the second half at the weekend, but we made as many passes in the first half as we did the second.
Yeah.
There was just, it was more the tempo, and we made the subs, and sometimes subs can come on and have a great impact, and sometimes subs can come on and the tempo just drops off a wee bit more. And I think Kun and Jota looked quite sharp when the rare occasions they got the ball, but I just think, you know, it was a natural dip. I am not going to hammer anybody for it. But the 1,000, and so I've got two different apps. One says 1,025, one says 1,022, and that is sometimes the nature of data apps, is that you will get slight variations. The Opta one says 1,022.
Even according to your kind of, just your quick kind of attempt to kind of verify it, you seem to have found a Bayern Munich game that tops it.
Yeah. Well, certainly they're saying, so I said 1,022 and they're saying 1,033 from an attempted 1,109.
Yeah, you can imagine Bayern, so. I mean, it's teams like Celtic and Bayern that are so dominant on their, well, I know Bayern didn't win it last year, but generally so dominant in their own patch, that it would be somebody like Celtic or Bayern Munich in terms of European football, wouldn't it?
Yeah, or well, Barcelona would be the one that I would, if you said to me offhand, outside of the Spanish international team, if you said to me name a team who's likely got that record, I would have said Barcelona.
Yeah,
And
I
then
suppose so.
if you said you're wrong, I'd have probably went to Bayern or, Ajax would be another one in Dutch football. You maybe think Ajax against a smaller team might have just, literally
I have
passed
to
the
say
game
that
there.
it's not been picked up on, and certainly it wasn't what Harry picked up on, but 87% possession. I can't really remember Celtic better than that.
In the first half, at one point, it popped up. When I rewatched the game, it popped up. I'm sure it said we were at 89 at one point. And actually, to go back, because I am prone to wandering off in tangents, as we all well know, you said to me about James Morris, and I said to you, I'll check. And I've got it on my screen, and I've had it on my screen since yesterday.
Right, sorry.
Sorry. 42 attempts, 42 passes from 43 attempts, 98% pass accuracy.
I said 98%,
Yeah.
didn't I?
Yep, you did. 47 touches. And again, that'll be my big takeaway for that game was that first 30 minutes is like a sort of a standard setup for how I'd like to see us play and to extend that over periods of time to see that one and two touch, the movements that were just constant. As I say, Forrest coming in off the side, and you were right, his game intelligence now is he's older, he's not quite as fast, he's not slow,
He's
but
no slow. Even he
he's
was
not quite as
even before
fast.
he went off. He was still kind of willing to go at guys. He was still willing to try and kind of beat them for pace. He's not afraid to try and beat a man
Yeah.
still.
Well, I've always liked the fact people say he's not got a trick, but I like the fact that he likes to come inside and he's got a really good outside of the foot shot that
Oh
not many
yeah.
players are willing to attempt. You very rarely see players want to do that, come in and outside the foot, because obviously he's right-footed on the right wing. That's now almost alien to most teams.
No,
But the fact that he's got that, I've always liked that about him.
he's inventive in the sense that because I think was it for one of the other main moves that he was obviously he did the flick over to Johnston for the goal, but before that I think was it another goal that he did a back heel into somebody's path? Was it in the build up to one of the goals, or was that a chance that because there was just
That's I
before.
wrote about 5 goals. I don't remember it being for a goal.
Out in the build up, it was like because if you're taking it back maybe five or six, there was definitely one he swept at a back, he almost swept it behind himself. But I mean, he was trying all these things. It's like for a guy who doesn't, it's like, apparently doesn't have a trick, he was certainly being imaginative.
Yeah, no, well, to me, specifically around him in the game, it was, and again, I've referenced this in what was written. I thought at times we had Kilmarnock so pushed back that they had set up in a sort of 5-3-2, which kind of surprised me a wee bit when we kind of said it was, at times it was a 4-5-1, then it was a 5-3-2. And poor Bobby Wills, I was actually looking forward to seeing Bobby Wills because obviously
Yeah, I
he
was
was once
saying
one
because I
I
was saying.
wanted to see, but he never got the ball near him once. It was
No.
a lonely shift for him. But the fact that we were pushing Hitati, Forrest, Engels often was starting in the middle, and then as Forrest came inside, he'd go to the right wing, and AJ would come through the middle of them. McGregor was sitting quite happily just where he sits, just ahead of Scales and Carter Vickers. But Hitati and Taylor were practically like within 5 yards of Adam Ida or Dyson. It was the front line. Got
Yeah,
Kilmarnock so hard back that at times Kilmarnock's line across the defence was six and seven, and you're going.
I saw it. Ah, you could because I'm actually in line with that. When I was sitting in my family's seat, so I'm in line with like an 18-yard box. That 18-yard box. So that's what I did notice. I said to the guy who was beside me, I said, "Look at that. That's six or seven there in that line."
They at one point, I think if you'd have put them and asked them to hold hands, they could have held hands from one side of the pitch to the other because
Yeah, there was
it was
definitely.
just. They were getting so far back. And as I say, I credit them with the second half, and I understand that there's a wee bit of sort of view of we should have kicked on and scored more. But I'd give Killie a wee bit of credit in the sense that there was a lot of blocks. There was the block for Coon. There was the wee flick for McGregor to put Jota in, and he got the block, and it's the corner. Engels has hit the bar with a really nice step. But last but not least, in terms of goal, Ralston's goal.
Oh yeah, it was funny. That was
Lovely.
exactly like the one he scored against Kilmarnock on the opening day of the season.
Loved it. Absolutely loved it. It was, the pace had well and truly come off at that point. It's injury time. You knew that on the as soon as that 93rd minute came on the clock, Beaton was blowing the whistle. There wasn't going to be any sort of, oh, the ball's been out or anything like that. 93rd minute, that whistle was gone. And just picked up the pace a wee bit again. And then Carter Vickers has went into Hatate, who by this point is playing as the striker. Him and McCown sort of taking turns as almost being the number nine. And Hatate's just stepped off, round the corner, and Ralston. That was beautiful. Loved it.
I'll tell you, but it nearly wasn't a goal because Jota was trying to get on the end of it,
He
and Jota would have been.
did try to sneak under that one,
But
naughty boy.
he would have, I think he would have probably been offside.
I never actually looked to see where he
Yeah,
was. I seen him sliding.
because we were all going, I hope he didn't touch that, because if he's touched that, then that won't count. Because he
Well,
was desperately sliding in
you
to
know,
score.
some people have been questioning lines drawn at the weekend as it is, so I wouldn't have liked to have seen that one went to VAR. But you definitely are right. He did. He committed to it, which, to be fair, you want players to, because it's one of those. If Ralston
Yeah,
slaps
as long as you've
it,
stayed on side, as long as you've checked your line.
but it's
But I mean,
good to see attacking the back post. But Ralston, brilliant goal, loved it, loved it, loved it.
here's the question, but was that Saturday Jota and Kun starting on the bench? Was that their kind of knuckles wrapped? Is that will that be them? They've served their punishment by not starting then, so they'll just will they will be wheeled back into the starting lineup for Hampden.
So when we look back on it, you're looking the three players hooked, or four players hooked, sorry. Trusty, Schlupp, Jota and Kun. Jota, I don't think necessarily got hooked in terms of him being horrific against us. And Jota, I don't think he was any worse than anybody else. I think what Jota is, he's been on ice for so long, and he's trying to get up to pace with everybody, and the team are still. You know, a lot of the team are still similar to what he had when he was here before he left. There's still a lot of players who are still there, but I still think this is now Rodgers' setup. So the change in the dynamic is different from what he had under Ange, which was basically just get the ball and, you know, a lot more aggressive in how players sort of just got it and bombed on, whereas we still attack well. But there's a bit more of a structure to it. And I think with Jota, it's just 18 months of practically not playing any football, coming in, getting used to the setup. I think he just took him out because it's one of those, it's Kilmarnock. You know that Kilmarnock got a couple of big defenders, had him up front as a focal point, and it worked at times last season. And if you're taking Kun out the side, you just get a better balance with the three that started against Kilmarnock, against the way that Kilmarnock got set up. So I don't think Jota was rap on the knuckles, naughty boy. I think more, I don't know, just a selection process. Kun was definitely knuckles wrapped. You don't get hooked twice at half time in three games and
Yeah,
get away with
so
that.
we think Jota will come back, but not necessarily Kun.
I don't know if he'll change anything going into the game against St John's that weekend. I wonder if he will look and go. And so I'm going to revert to the Substack thing here, because I said in the Substack chat, you know, let's have a discussion here. What do the viewers want to talk about? And let me get this. So Jerry had asked about Adam Ida in terms of the signing process. And let me go back. Andy had also said, how do we solve a problem like Adam Ida? Adam Ida started on Saturday for me because of the fact that he's a central striker. It's a natural position. He's bigger physically. And when you're placing him against the bigger Killie defenders, you know, you like, or Brendan obviously liked the look of that matchup and felt that that was a point of reference for the team to be able to sort of move around Ida. So, again, I've said this, I don't think what Ida done on the ball at weekend was particularly great. A lot of times the ball never got near him because
Oh,
the midfielders
strange,
were
isn't it?
having so much joy.
That's what I was going to say. Strange, you can be so dominant and your central striker isn't really involved.
No, but I think his involvement was more his positioning where he was. You know, even when Carter Vickers hits the shot, you see him and he's got the expression of he's laughing. Almost like unbelievable that Carter Vickers has just slammed one into the top corner. Unbelievable goal. Ida following that up is a wee positive for me, because Bully saves that. He's there. He's not hiding for anything. He is looking to get involved. It's just the form on the ball isn't quite there. In part, I kind of think at times this season, and people have mentioned this before, that we're trying to play him as almost like a target man, a link man that'll drop in, take the ball, pass it. Adam Eder, to me, is not that guy. Adam Eder is the guy you want to get the ball in, just in front of him and let him head towards goal. I don't think Eder, personally, is that comfortable being the guy facing his own goal and then playing back and then dropping deep. And it is, you know, of course you work on that. But I think maybe we've had a problem this season at focusing on playing in a way that is going to benefit him, his skill set most. Because there was a moment actually going back to the St Johnstone game where he got the ball on the right-hand side. I can't remember the defender, but it was a guy of good size, and he went past them, just a wee shoulder, done him for dust and down the side. And then you look back at his goals last season, a lot of them are literally just balls across the box, and it's just 1-2 touch, bang, in the net.
Yeah, and this season,
a lot more of it is on the D, and I don't think that's where you're going to get the best of them. And if that's maybe the way that we're going to play going forward, we maybe need to find a guy who is different from both him and Eisen, who is comfortable playing that sort of more back-to-goal link process. And Rodgers has had a history of that, having these sort of false nine-type strikers who like to drop, and he'd done it at Swansea with like Fabio Barini. He's had others.
Odson Edward even, you know, when you think about an Edward.
Yeah, he used to like to drop off to the left. Musa was probably the only one that he's had who was a bit comfortable doing a bit of everything. Musa was comfortable with his head up, but Musa was comfortable with someone on his back. Maybe that's what they kind of hoped they could turn Adam Eder into, but sometimes I think you just have to accept a player is good at X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And that this thing is never going to be a strong suit.
You could genuinely see him running with the same 11 in the semi-final?
I think on the basis of that, the start of that game...
I think Taylor's definitely, he's nailed down his place.
If Taylor doesn't start, I might say some bad words. Taylor has to nail down his place. That first, he played, what was it, 68 minutes on Saturday. And to me, and we said this in this Substack chat, who was your man of the match? And I understand, and I've listened to some other people during the course of today talk about who the man of the match, and most of them gave it to Rio. And I absolutely get it. But again, I go back to the point, I wanted to see us start positively. And to me, the catalyst, the fire starter, was Taylor.
Yeah.
Because he was driving into positions. He was allowing McGregor to move off into other areas by going and taking his role. You know, you've seen McGregor in the left-back slot. You've seen McGregor in his natural six. You've seen McGregor drop between Carter Vickers and Scales. And Taylor and Johnston as well, because he deserves a bit of credit, but probably more so Taylor, coming into that midfield and just that constant movement between those players deeper was causing Kamara. Because Kamara, you know, everybody knows they want to go man for man. How do you man for man?
Yeah. I was saying about that. Like, you could tell that they were struggling with their man for man, which has worked for them in the past against Celtic.
Yeah, it's to go man for man is a very disciplined thing. You need to have a lot of energy and a lot of stamina. But I think they were not necessarily looking to go almost man for man, but I think they were looking to contain McGregor with a couple of players. But McGregor was never always where they sort of had almost pinpointed that he was going to be. And instead it was Taylor and it was Johnston. And then, as I say, we got higher up the pitch and it was Forrest coming inside, and Engels, a guy that they probably thought he's going to be more central, he's on the right wing.
Yeah.
You know, Dyson was staying wide left. Like, he really kept his feet on the touchline for the majority of the game, and probably one of his quiet games of late. But his positioning was allowing Hitati to come into the space inside him. Taylor coming up into that number 10 role. It was just so many positives. And when you look at St Johnstone game, you go, we're going to need that against him. And also to take advantage of the fact that this is the Perth, it's not McDermott Park, it's Hampden, much bigger pitch.
I know.
You know,
there'll no be any repeat of Perth Saturday. I know you don't make predictions. I do make predictions, and sometimes they're way off the mark. But You've got to be bold and say, I was going to get this right. It's incredible how, if it went wrong, people would see it as this real kind of stain on the season. That is the one thing that it's almost unhealthy where the expectation levels are for Celtic now. You know, it's hard to believe, but Celtic don't win the treble. There's been something missing for the season. That's what it feels like. And it feels like we're almost all slid into that kind of mindset.
I'd be brutally honest in the sense that I could not give a toss about the League Cup. But I understand why some folk do, because if Rangers win it, it's like we've lost it. Even if someone else beats, so like Kilmarnock the other season there when they put us out. I personally don't care about League Cup. I would quite happily see us go back to doing what Arsene Wenger done with Arsenal in the League Cup in England and go, young lads, squad players, if you make it through to the final, you're playing. I don't care if you're playing Rangers. That would be my preference. Personally, I would see the League Cup done away with in its entirety. It's a pain in the arse. When people talk about games and the volume of games, they've now compacted the League Cup into a tiny space of time. It's like, what is it, 2-3 months? It used to be done
it was
in like
July,
February.
December.
Yeah. Final used to be in what, February? About then?
March, kind of. February, March.
We've compacted all that in at the time where we're talking about European games and we watch Scottish teams do well in Europe. So if we were to get, say, 3-4 Scottish teams into group stages of Europe, we've also compacted this League Cup into that space where those games tend to happen. So for me, I'd happily see it scrapped. I understand why teams want to keep it, because actually you get more money for winning the League Cup than you do the Scottish Cup. But personally, Scottish Cup to me, last game of the season, prestige.
Yeah.
That's why I would be really disappointed if something was to go wrong next weekend.
I want them to keep the League Cup until Celtic have won it more than Rangers, because that's the only, once the 55 is up there, you know, and I'm sure 56 will follow soon afterwards for Celtic, yeah, but
I get that in terms of the number, but I just, as a tournament, if you give me the choice, I would choose the
Scottish Cup. I know. There's plenty of countries don't seem to need a second cup competition, so.
No, they chuck in a charity shield or something like that at the start. And I'd be quite happy to see us do that, you know, just go, or allow the League Cup to be played instead of that Petrofac, whatever it's called nowadays. This is terrible because my own team playing it, but
the Challenge Cup.
That's it. Do you know why the Petrofac sticks in my head? It's because I never or very, very rarely ever watch Rangers. I just don't see the point in putting myself through any sort of, I don't know, unnecessary damage. But I remember when they lost one of the games. And who was it they lost? Was it
Race Rovers?
No, there was another one they lost, and it was
Alloa. I was at Alloa that night. Alloa, yeah, Alloa. That was a fun night. Wee Barry Smith in charge of Alloa.
Yeah, it's one of the very few games that I've actually made a point at. I wasn't sat watching it, but I had it on. Now, I don't even put their games on my telly. If I'm sat in this office on a Sunday and their game's on telly, so Aberdeen at weekend, I do not have that on my screen. I'll have the Sky Sports News and I'll see the score come up. And if they're getting humped, they'll occasionally flick on to watch the last minute or something like that, just for a laugh, hear the boos. But I don't watch them. But the Petrofac crop, as it was at the time, I watched that. Hilarious. Oh,
yeah, they were 2-1 up. I covered the game that night. Yeah. It was very funny. The post-match stuff was very funny.
Oh,
it was too long a story to tell, but like, it was very funny.
But that's why it'll probably always remain as the Petrofac Cup to me.
It's
changed. But no, I think, you know, looking at next weekend, and I'm sure, you know, there might be a pod between now and then to preview that game as a standalone thing. But if he went with the same team, I don't think anybody would be disappointed. Some people would go, you know, you maybe put Jota in and move Maeda back to the middle. But when you look at how they performed on Saturday, even accounting for the fact if you were unhappy with the second half, we still won 5-1. Yeah. The team.
We're not accepting people being unhappy with the second half. We're not accepting with you.
I just think it's one of those where, even if you're that mindset, I get it, fair enough. You and I don't agree with it, but I do understand it, and I would have liked to see score more, but we've done that to death. But I just think the connections between the team and how comfortable everybody looked, rotating in and out of the different positions, and you know, as I say, even taking into account what people might criticise about Adam Reader's performance on Saturday, the way the team structure worked and the way that everybody functioned off each other was so fluid and so enjoyable to watch that if he goes with that team on Saturday, it's Saturday, isn't it? Oh, we're Sunday, aren't we? We're Sunday this
Sunday.
Week, aren't
we? Yeah. It's Easter Sunday.
Aye, Sunday game. If he goes with that team, I'm happy.
Is there something to do with the person I co-host this with? Matthew, couldn't he get the day right for
the
St. Johnston game? I kept trying to kind of nudge him towards like Sunday.
No, well, this is daft. I'd done the preview article for the Substack of Celtic against St. Johnston for the league game. And when I first sent it over to Stephen to pop it up for me, so I've got the apps on my phone and I get the fixtures, but one of my apps goes top to bottom and the other one goes bottom to top in terms of where the fixtures, the next one
right,
is.
Right.
So at the top of my screen on the main app that I use, I had the cup game. So I'm writing the preview for the cup game because I'm like, Celtic against St. John's the weekend. And it's the cup, it's coming up. And I knew we had the two games, but I just, like, it's a cup game. So I'm looking at the cup, going, I'm referencing cup game. And then I sent it to Stephen, and I was like, it's not a cup game this week. It's a league game, you daft.
There's something about St. Johnston and Sundays that doesn't agree with Celtic Underground.
You know, it's a broader point, and I'm sure that we'll probably cover this on something else as well, about league structures and things like that. But just the volume of times that we play against the same team. Like, there was a season years back, I think we played about Aberdeen something like 7 or 8 times.
Yeah.
Because of a cup, and then there was a replay, and then...
Yeah, I know. But all will be well on Sunday, surely, eh? I'm going to say Celtic are going to turn it on Sunday. That's what I'm saying. Bye.
I'm hopeful, as always. One thing I wanted to get with you, because I am conscious of time, and I've even went over the amount of time that I was giving myself this week, but I had made a point of, and I like to cover this because, as I say, the engagement part for me is one of the biggest things, but the Substack we popped in to say, is there anything that anybody wanted to cover? And we've kind of covered some of it because Andy had said about Roger's comments at the weekend about fleshing up the squad and how Scales and Taylor have come back and we play quicker and how do we solve Bromley? Well, Ida, as I say, I think maybe more by design. I think a good pre-season will do Ida and Engels and Trusty no harm if the club decide that, you know, that they're happy enough with them. Signing them so late on, them not getting a pre-season, and I've said this umpteen times, ask any professional football player the difference between a season having had a good pre-season and a season where they've not had a pre-season or they've maybe been injured and then had to step in is night and day for them. And so could some of these players be doing a bit better? Probably. But I'm hopeful that a good pre-season and hopefully next season when we're signing players, we get done a bit earlier so Brendan gets the summer to work them, because training during the season, as we've covered earlier on, doesn't work. It has a negative effect. So let's do it in pre-season.
Leave your training for the pre-season.
Yeah, training's a pre-season gig only. The rest of it. Ian had said about man of the match, and he'd said he thought Rea was man of the match, was assist his two wonderful goals and that he was always available. And I cannot disagree with that, as I say. For me, it was Greg. Who did you give it to?
Well, I actually thought Patati, because when it came through the tannoy, and we were going, Greg Taylor, maybe I wasn't, you know, watching as analytically enough or whatever, you know, when the way you've described it, but I thought, surely it's got to be Patati.
You're taking the man of the match off the man who's walked on the pitch with his beautiful newborn.
I know, it's amazing. When you're at the game, you're not, I wasn't actually conscious that that's what was happening. You don't actually know. What a strange thing to do. What age is she, about 3 weeks old or something?
So I loved that. I thought it was really nice.
For a guy, you think, God, he might not be a Celtic player in, 6 weeks' time or whatever.
Maybe why he's done it. Who knows? Let's go into the reading up the psyche of that.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah. But it's almost in Roots, you know, when they used to, well, you're probably too young to remember.
No, I've seen Roots. It was, oddly, I was quite young when I first seen Roots, and it's still to this day is one of the best things I've ever watched.
You know, but how they hold up their baby, that's the first thing they do, is when the baby's born, and it's like Chicken George and all that, you know?
Mm.
Oh. I did it with my daughter, actually, when Nakamura scored, because that was just, she was a couple of weeks old when they scored against Dundee United. I took her out. I think I've told people that before in the podcast.
People didn't understand that reference. It's The Lion King with Simba.
Right.
Where he holds, if you've never seen Roots, if you've seen The Lion King, then it's where he holds up Simba. I love things like, especially, you know, I'm not a new parent, my kids are, they're young, but, you know, the two best moments of my life, and getting married, obviously, but my kids, and I loved seeing that. I thought it was really nice, really sweet, and genuinely chuffed for him. And Austin Trusty is just, I think his partner's just gave birth to baby girl as well. I'm sure it's a baby girl that I've seen. So that's lovely. And so maybe you're the same. And to me, that warms the heart. I like things like that.
Yeah.
But I give it to Taylor. So.
Yeah.
And you're real. And I agree. It was, to me, it was a smidge between the two, but I just, for what I was hoping for that game, was someone to really spark a hot start. And I felt Taylor...
He did that.
Along with Hitati, were kind of key to that. But I just enjoyed the fact that Taylor coming back in and really, you know, giving it hammer and tongs early doors against his old club as well. And again...
Looney's higher.
Loved it.
I tell you, like, I love my Waynes, and I've got two Waynes as well, but... See, the days they were born, I've had better days, I have to say. doesn't it come close to 86 at Love Street? But there you go. There's a note to finish on.
That's there. For me, enjoyable thing. I'll just quickly flag these because I am conscious of the fact we've run out of time. And as you said, lectures are normally 45 minutes with attention span. So it's too late for me to tell you to pause halfway through because we've went over time. But just some of the other comments were... People have talked about set plays and being poor at them. And do we have a set piece coach? I actually don't know if we have a set piece.
Gavin Strachan? I think he's responsible for some of the set plays.
Yeah, I don't think he's a dedicated set piece coach, though, is he? He's just a coach who... Aston Villa have put Austin McCann, who, to be fair, Austin McCann was not
corrects us.
Austin McCann was a Airdrie left back or something, wasn't he?
He was the guy that scored when Hearts beat Celtic ended their kind of under a knee. He was also my gas fitter, it turned out. Then I said to him, I said, you the Austin McCann? He was up at the house. I told Neil Lennon, I said, I've just seen Austin McCann's just been at a house. And he went, bastard. It was about 5 years ago or so.
I don't think we have Austin McPhee, and we don't have the guy for Arsenal who stands on the touchline going to Declan Rice, like, you know, bend it. And we don't, I believe, have that guy. I know that you're probably right in what you're saying about Gavin Strachan maybe being someone who does some of the work around set pieces, but I don't know how much work he does in it. So could we be better at them? I think, like everything, when you look at Arsenal this season and how they started the season, if that gets you an extra 10 goals a season, of course you want to be better at it. Especially helpful in Europe when you're playing against teams that maybe we are struggling against, and maybe we do have to then revert to some of the things that we see teams do against us up here and sort of just be a wee bit smarter in how we engineer certain things. I'm a big believer in it because... Big fan of the NFL, and I've listened to NFL coaches talk about how free kicks and corners and even in some cases throw-ins, it's your one opportunity to pretty much structure players wherever you want.
Yeah.
And if you get it and you do it quickly and you have people who are good at executing it, it can be a game changer. It's almost like, you know, it's that moment where whoever your set piece taker is, like your quarterback, he knows, in theory, where everybody's looking to go, and it's can you take advantage of it? And Gareth Southgate done it with England at the World Cup previously, where he'd done loads of work with NFL coaches, and it was the World Cup where I think they scored like 9 goals for set plays, corners, free kicks, and things like that. So there is value in it, definitely. Could we do with something like that? I think in some ways, as much as we talk about freshening up the squad with new players and bringing new faces, that I also think sometimes there's maybe value in Rodgers maybe bringing in a different coach every couple of years just to change the dynamics within that. So maybe that is an area you can look at that. What were the other things that popped? There was loads of popping out. Someone asked about development players and getting game time. I would love to answer that question, but we'll hear for the rest of the night. So I will go into that another time. But certainly, you know, the bench at the weekend didn't really include any development players, B team players. There was no Jude Bonner, there was no Daniel Cummings, there was nobody that's sort of been in and around this season. We had a fairly stacked senior bench this weekend. Ralston,
I think it was the same last weekend, was it?
Yeah, Ralston would be our only traditional homegrown one. Obviously, Luke McCown would count as developed one in Scotland, but you know, it was Bernardo who never got on, McCowan, Jota Kuhn. Scott Bain would have been the goalie. I'm trying to remember who else was on the bench the weekend.
Ralston.
It was
Trusty,
Kuhn, Jota, Schlupp, Ralston, McCowan, Bain, Naroki, Trusty, Bernardo. So you could maybe, if you want to be pernickety, you could maybe say we had two centre halves on the bench. Was that, you know, was that necessary?
Some coaches don't want to give even time on the bench to young players without feeling they've earned it somehow. Mm-hmm. Just for them to be there. Like, I know that some managers get quite kind of uppity about that.
Yeah. Rodgers would always make the point of, you've got to have earned it. I'm not going to go into that, really, because it's an entirely other podcast. But would I like to have seen a young player on the bench? Yes. Someone has asked about development players that I would like to have seen come in. The B team aren't playing for anything right now. B team are going to come second or third in the Lowland League, because that league is won. East Kilbride have won it. In terms of players coming up, I really like the looks of Colby Donovan, and he was obviously in at the start of season in some of the pre-season friendlies. Mitchell Frame, the left-back, was one in previous
years.
He got his 15-20 minutes against Feyenoord. He'd done very well. But
he was excellent.
Instance, again, this would be going down the rabbit hole, and I'm not going to go. But the B team, some of them, I think, that I have seen, have kind of hit a bit of a wall with their development, because there's only so much you're going to get from playing in the Lowlands.
Yeah.
And also, that's the problem at the moment, to bring them into sinking, the first team.
Yeah, and when you get that sinking feeling that you're not going to make the breakthrough, or the chances, or your chances are the sand timer is just, you know, there's no many grains left at the top anymore.
Yeah, there's no right or wrong answer, but do we need to get better at it? Definitely, of course, absolutely. And at some point, hopefully, we'll maybe do a podcast specifically around that, where I'll go into more detail of my experiences and get the thoughts of what all the guys think.
Yeah, definitely.
Certainly, you know, pathway is a topic that regularly crops up. And in regards to the...
What about the likes of your man Anderson? What these guys that are away? How are they done this year?
So you've got Ben Summers and Matthew Anderson, who are over in Austria.
Yeah. Do they get a regular game?
Yeah, they played. Anderson starts most weeks, and Summers, I think, starts most weeks. I have not looked at the data for about a month. The last time I actually watched the game, Ben Summers got sent off. Austria's a weird one, because they have quite a long winter break that goes all the way through into, like, it's the very end of February, start of March. Let me look here. So Matthew Anderson played at the weekend, and Admira won 1-0. Data-wise, just a quick scan, played quite well. The one thing I'm unsure about Ben Summers and Anderson is, I've heard conflicting information on both. I believe their contracts both end this summer. But someone did say to me that they just said club might have an option to extend that.
Why bother sending them over there the last year of their contract? I mean, there must be something.
So Ben Summers obviously went on loan to Dunfermline last year, and it kind of hit and miss situation. Anderson had obviously been in Austria last year, along with Toby, who's now on loan, the goalkeeper on loan at Dunfermline.
Oh, yeah.
Again, rabbit hole, but I can't go into specifics, but the Mira thing potentially is a good thing. It's good that Matthew Anderson is getting active minutes, and he's playing for a team who are doing really well. Last time I looked, they were top of the league, so they're looking for promotion. In League Two in Austria, they're still top of the league, got their 4 points clear, so they're doing quite well. So that's a good thing. That's a good experience, having that pressure.
He had a good American tour last summer, didn't he?
He'd done all right, if I remember, in the games.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did.
Offhand. I believe he had opportunities to go to the championship. Or I was told he had opportunities to go to the championship, but the club were more keen on him going back to Mira. Maybe that is to maintain that relationship.
Yeah, of course.
Long story. But he's doing well. So yeah, we've got these players. How many of them are going to make this step up? I think, as I say, it's a rabbit hole, big, much larger conversation.
All you're looking for is one or two.
Yeah, how we help that process. And nobody is entitled to be on the bench. Nobody is entitled to step up just because they've done well in the B team. That, you know, there has to be that element of the manager believing that you've earned it. However, the players need to be better prepared, in my opinion, but also I think, in my opinion, the club need to be better at preparing them or supporting that preparation for that step. From the moment you sign a pro contract at 16, you're eligible for the first team. When, you know, it's people looking to say, oh, you've got to go through under 17s, you've got to go through under 19s or 16s and 18s as it is currently, and it's now going to be 17s and 19s. You don't. You sign your pro contract, you can play pro football. Very, very difficult and takes a very exceptional talents to make that jump at 16 to play for Barcelona or play for Celtic, or, you know, it takes a real exceptional player. But the problem is we are now having players hit 19 and 20 and they're kind of stuck.
Yeah.
And again, huge rabbit hole.
I know.
Whole other podcast, but just, there is ways, in my opinion, that the club could do more to make that better, but also the onus has to be on these young men to recognise that they're in a position where nobody's going to hand them anything. Rodgers needs to win games. And so people will say, you know, they need to be in a situation where they have a manager who has faith in them, but they have their part to play in that. And I'll go down an entire rabbit hole and we'll end up for hours and hours and hours. And it's already, I think we've been going for well over an hour.
I'll let you enjoy. Was there any other
Substack? Why did we not shoot from range for more often? Was one from Mark.
I suppose you look at, do you mean when he's looking at Cameron Carter-Vickers?
So he's looked at CCB and Scales had a fair rip for range. That was
he
it.
Did.
It was one of the only saves the Kelly goalkeeper made. That was a good save as well.
And then Engels was hit the bar.
Engels hits the bar for the edge of the box. Why did we not do it more often? In some ways, I would say the blame lies within how the game is presented to players nowadays, that they're, you know, analytics is brilliant for so many things, but there is part of analytics in the structure of how games go now. That I understand kind of when people say it's
off
a
the
too
cuff.
Clinical.
People, you're not expected to do things off the cuff.
Do we think anybody extent on the coaching staff on the bench on Saturday was sat going, go on, Cameron, have a go, penguin?
No.
And you have, like, you go back to stats for, like, the World Cup a couple of years ago where they said the vast majority of the goals came from teams getting down the side, just inside the box, and firing balls, passing balls across the front goal, 60-odd percent goals, was basically coming from that structure of movement. So get the ball across the front goal and once the post, get your strikers hitting shots for there, and your XG is higher and things like that. And that is all fine and well, and I understand the value in it. I am not hammering this in any way, but there's a part of it that's joyless.
That's another podcast, and that's another rabbit hole.
Yeah, but I always say this, take Celtic out of it. Why do you watch football? I watch football because it's entertaining. I watch football because I love watching players like Ronaldinho. I love seeing Cameron Carter-Vickers go, do you know what? Bollocks to him. And in his words, shanks one at the top corner. That was amazing. I love watching Anthony Ralston break into box, throw a shoulder, jink the other way, batter one and put one. Like, if we played the football clinically by the idea that we need to be in the most optimal place possible before we're allowed to shoot, I give up with football if that's the case.
Yeah.
I understand the value in understanding those things, but I never ever want a Celtic player, especially in the type of football that we as supporters have sort of been taught that is the Celtic way, to think, I am not allowed to beat a man. I am not allowed to, you know, try and bend one in for 30 yards.
I don't think we are, but I just think
he's asking that question in the sense that I'm saying, I think that gets in players' heads sometimes that they go, oh, you know, if I pass it to him, there's a better chance. And I think the way that football is nowadays, where everybody is all about, they go back, and I've heard young players doing it in youth teams, what are my stats?
Yeah.
I don't give a shit what your passing accuracy is. I genuinely don't. Like James Forrest, that's brilliant that he got 98%. I am happy if James Forrest comes off with 75%, but he creates three brilliant opportunities. That would be me, but I understand why people look and they go, you know, the Pep way where it has to be
maybe
a bit more.
Yeah, but the problem is if you're driven by the kind of...
Yeah.
Driven by the stats rather than the stats come along through how you are.
And some coaches and some players are aware that some coaches are very, very of that mindset. So when we ask the question of why do we not shoot from range more often, it's a question for the players. But I would say it's having that confidence to go, do I feel confident enough to do it? And Carter Vickers said that. I do it in training from time to time. Most of the time it goes into the woods. But in that moment, he had that confidence and he's went and he's ripped it. And it was lovely, beautiful. As I said, Nakamura would have been proud of that one. And Scales' attempt was equally as good. It's just it was a wee bit further and the goalies obviously saved it. I'd like to see us do it more. I certainly think that there are times in games where we have some really good, capable players from distance. I think, you know, there are guys who strike a ball really cleanly in our team. Callum McGregor, I think they said, is joint top scorer for balls, for shots outside the box within the SPFL. And if he'd have scored one on Saturday, he'd have went above Tav Penn and various others. So we do have guys who are capable.
I think nearly all of us this season have come from outside the box, haven't they? So McGregor's.
I'm struggling to think of one that's inside the box.
I think there was maybe one inside the box, but I think is it nine he's got this season or something like that? So I think eight of them have come outside the box, I think.
I can't see the. I don't have a quick access to the data where he's shooting us, but I can see how many he's scored.
But
he scored eight in the league, and offhand, I cannot remember. Oh, so it's saying here. Of his eight league goals, he scored two inside the box. Yeah, six from 25 attempts outside the box, two from eight attempts inside the box.
Outside the box, that's not a bad strike rate, is it?
No.
Success rate? So he does it. I mean, he's done it 20, well, so he's done 25 shots outside the box, him alone. So Celtic, you can't say they don't do it.
So that's just the league, obviously. So Cal does obviously have time. I think it's one of those where if the space opens up, it's does the player just have the confidence and belief in themselves to rip? So six from 25, 24% of his shots from outside the box have found the net. That's good.
That's really good. That's really good.
So,
So any more before we...
any more for any more? Let me have a quick look. Apologies to anybody if I've not covered your question. I promise that if I haven't, I will look tomorrow and I will reply to it in the Substack chat.
You're a stats guy, an analytics guy. You're even looking at our own analytics, Celtic Underground analytics.
I am not anti-stats in any shape or form. I've always said that
No, you've got a good handle on it for me.
When I go and do this scouting, I always, if anybody asks me, I say I'm 51 eyes and brain, hopefully, what's in there, and 49 is stats. And I don't like to be led either way. I like to just use them to validate each other. So if I see stats on a player before I go and watch them, I'll make a note of some of them, and I like to go and use my eyes to validate that. So you will see some players who have got really high pass accuracy. I won't name the player in particular, but it's a player I went to see, and it was like 87% pass accuracy. And it was in the lower league, so the data is a little bit smaller. So you're not seeing how many of those are like through ball attempts or progressive passes. And the role that he was in, he plays a more attacking midfield role. You need to obviously be looking to make a few more progressive passes. You want to be seeing a wee bit of intelligence as to how he's moving forward. And I got to a game and I asked the supporter of the team that I was watching, it's like, what's he like? Just like, in your opinion, just give me a bit. I'd never ever seen him live before. And he said to me, boring, just sideways passes. Like, you know, he's functional in what he does, but he's not a good attacking midfielder. He's good at just moving the ball from A to B. And I sat and I watched this game and the support was absolutely spot on. But what I really noticed was he had attempted a few sort of higher risk passes in the game. And so I don't know what his percentage would have been at the 80th minute, but at the 80th minute, in the last 5 minutes, and I've heard Aidan McGeady reference this before, in the last 5 minutes, he played a load of wee shuttle passes, totally unnecessary, 3-4 yard passes, get the stats up.
Well, I've heard about that.
Few the extra
people
wee,
are so conscious of it.
And I've seen players do the few extra wee bursts at the end, and when you hear that and then you see it and you go, there's a value to them, but I only know that because I sat and watched them. And I sat and spoke to someone who watches them every week and went, you know, tell me. Now, that's not to say that person was going to be right. They could have been wrong. But you're not going to get that by just looking at a spreadsheet. You're not going to, you know, get that feeling of how others feel about them who see them far more than you do. You're not going to sort of see those wee sprints that are unnecessary or the wee passes that are unnecessary. You'll just see it as a data thing to say, made X amount of lateral passes, right? That's fine. But in those last 5 minutes, he made about 10 of them.
Just get the stats up. On that note, and we haven't even mentioned, as you say, maybe there'll be another podcast later in the week. It's like we're all on tenterhooks about how our Hampden app work, it's the first time it's ever going to be. Oh my God, this could be a recipe for disaster. It's like Celtic supporters are not exactly renowned for going to games early, are they? I'm advising myself. I keep telling myself, got to be there early on Sunday, got to be there early on Sunday, got to be there early on Sunday. Maybe I can commute it to everybody. Oh, be there early on Sunday. Any Celtic supporters, I want you to see the full game. I'm the great Soprendo.
You might know this. I don't know. I've not been to a concert in Hampden for years. Have Hampden been using this app for concerts recently? Or is this a test? If this is a test thing, Jesus, turn up at 9:30 in the morning, you might get in by 12.
This is the first time I think they've done it for a football, fully. Because they've had a hybrid, they've had a mix of the app, but you still could get a paper ticket. But this is the first event, I think, that's purely on the app.
I absolutely fundamentally disagree with the fact that they force it to be purely on the app.
It's terrible. However, it's digital exclusion. It's terrible. It's not right.
But if you have the ability to use the app, I think that's not a bad thing, but I don't think it should ever be blanket. Having been down to Manchester recently and used that for Man United, and this is a road that Celtic will go down, absolute certainty, is my friend's a season ticket holder down there, but for me to be able to use his ticket, I have to pay for a membership, which is like 50 quid for a year. So I then buy a membership to Man United. My wife likes Man United, so that was why I had to go just before anybody starts going on about me being a Man United fan. I'm not. But you buy the membership. So I had to buy the membership for me and wife. So that was £100 for these two memberships. So my mate then has to add me as a friend on his season ticket, and he transfers me the ticket. And then I needed the app on my phone. Now, this is how extreme it got. I wanted to go into the superstore because my wife wanted to get a wee souvenir thing while we were down there. I had to show the app to show that I had the ticket for the game to get into the store. I then had to obviously come out of the store, which by the way, queue's never ending, but the amount of money they must make is obscene. There was things on sale in the store and they would be like, the price would be £80 for say a top. But if you had the app and you had the membership, it was £60. So when you got the counter, they scan your app, £60. Fair enough, right, whatever. Then you go on the ground and it's you go to the turnstile, and there was people around the turnstiles, but it's put your phone under, scan the app. And I was like, well, that's all fine and well, but what if your phone dies? Like, I know what you're saying about digital exclusion and some people don't want to have phones, this, that, and this, that. But I was thinking, what if my phone died? You know, I was down in Manchester today. I'd been out and about, you know, all day. What if my phone...
That's what... I'm sure there'll be instances of this in Sunday. God help us.
You know, what if I'd lost my phone or cracked my screen on the way in? Or what if I, you know, if I'm one of these people who has the phone that's got the cracked screen? One of my mates has got his phone's always got the smash screen. Like, all these different things. I'm sure there are solutions to that. If this is
I think you're goosed if your phone dies with these. And you say to them, I've got a ticket. And they'll say, how have you got a ticket? You say, oh, but my phone's died. Yeah, and so what are we supposed to do? No, but there's a ticket on it, aren't you?
My kids locked me out, which happens regularly on my phone.
Yeah.
All these different things. So I don't have a problem with them, but I also think, you know, there always needs to be alternatives because ultimately, you're right, it's digital exclusion.
Older folk that don't necessarily have smartphones, you might have a phone, but you might not necessarily also have a smartphone. God, I could fair get rid of my own smartphone, if, you know, to try and live off the grid. But I say this as a man doing a podcast.
Exactly.
Oh, well, look, we certainly went round the hoosers tonight then, Ross, and I thank you so much for your time.
We did. You said 45 minutes and we've already doubled that. No, listen, I've always said this, and especially, again, I'll repeat myself, but talking with you guys, the engagement with the Substack guys and the questions, things like that, and I really appreciate the fact that...
Questions are great, actually. The questions are great.
Scouts, Bill, Jerry, Paul, Alan, Peter, Mark, Brian, you know, Andy, all the comments, I love reading them. Like, I genuinely, when I get the alert on my phone to say that someone's put a comment on something that I've posted or is chatting in the Substack chat, I love it.
Me too. I mean, you engage. We do engage back. Yeah, it's great. And it's great. It was a great thing you did there, like kind of bringing the questions into this. So
yeah, no, and I love reading even the comments on the posts. And, you know, we've had some great stuff go up on the Substack recently, like the interview that you've done with the gentleman to do with Palestine, I forget his name.
Oh yeah, Peter.
Names. Yeah, loved it, and sort of being able to interact with that, and obviously I get the privilege of talking to yourself via group chats and things like that about things like that, and even sort of some of the other topics that have been covered recently. Some of them not so nice to talk about, but whether it's talking about the team and its performance or talking about anything to do with Celtic and the engagement via the Substack chat or the comments, personally, love it. As I say, if you pop anything there for me, I will always try to respond. Sometimes it'll take me a wee bit longer because, as I say, Easter holidays and I've got two young children to entertain. But
I'm the same. I always check in, see whatever's happening, and I think we're pretty good that way. Better let people, like, people will need to spend their entire Easter holidays watching this if we go on any longer.
That's true, right. Right. Get rid of me.
Great to see you again, Ross, right?
You too. And thanks for everything. Like, have a good week.
On the site, it's brilliant. Right, take care now, right, and very much for watching. If you've...
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision. and also subscribe to the CelticUnderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.